He didn't see me. He should have. My white, scared face filling one of those dark windows should have been perfectly visible to him where he sat. He should have seen the red pulse from the light I'd stuck on the roof of my car. He saw neither. He was as hypnotized as Huddy Royer had been when Huddy decided to crawl into the roadmaster's trunk and pull the lid shut behind him. I could feel it even from outside. That tidal pulse. That liveliness. There were even words in it. I suppose I might have made them up to suit myself, but it almost doesn't matter because it was the pulse that called them forth. The throb all of us had felt around the Buick from the very start. It was a throb some of us, the boy's father for one, had felt more strongly than others. "Come in or stay out," the voice in my head told me, and it spoke with perfect, chilling indifference. "I'll take one or two, then sleep. That much more mischief before I'm done for good. One or two, I don't care which." I looked up at the round thermometer mounted on the beam. The red needle had stood at 61 before I went down to the country way, but now it had dropped back to 57. I could almost see it slumping to even colder levels as I watched, and all at once I was struck by a memory, so vivid it was frightening. On the smoker's bench, this had been. I'd been smoking and Kurt had just been sitting. The smoker's bench had assumed odd importance in the 6 years since the barracks itself was declared a smoke-free zone. It's where we went to compare notes on cases we were rolling, to work out scheduling conflicts, to mull over retirement plans and insurance plans and the GDR. It was on the smoker's bench that Carl Brundage told me his wife was leaving him and taking the kids. His voice hadn't quavered, but tears had gone rolling down his cheeks as he talked. Tony had been sitting on the bench with me on one side and Kurt on the other. "Christ and the two thieves," he'd said with a sardonic smile, when he told us he was putting me up for the SC post his own retirement would leave vacant. If I wanted it, that was. The little gleam in his eyes saying he knew goddamn well I wanted it. Curtis and I had both nodded, not saying much. And it was on the smoker's bench that Kurt and I had our final discussion about the Buick 8. How soon before his death had that been? I realized with a nasty chill that it might have been on the very day. Certainly that would explain why the vividness of the memory seemed so terrible to me. "Does it think?" Kurt had asked. I could remember strong morning sun on his face and, I think, a paper cup of coffee in his hand. "Does it watch and think? Wait for its chances? Pick its moments?" "I'm almost sure not," I had replied. But I'd been troubled. Because almost covers a lot of territory, doesn't it? Maybe the only word in the language that covers more is if. But it saved its biggest horror show for a time when this place was almost entirely deserted, Ned's father had said. Thoughtful, setting his coffee aside so he could turn his Stetson over and over in his hands, an old habit of his. If I was right about the day, that hat was less than 5 hours from being knocked from his head and cast bloody into the weeds, where it would later be found among the McDonald's wrappers and empty Coke cans. As if it knew. As if it can think. Watch. Wait. I had laughed. It was one of those gruff little ha-ha laughs that don't really have much amusement in them. I told him he was cuckoo on the subject. I said, "Next thing you'll be telling me it sent out a ray or something to make that Norco tanker crash into the school bus that day." He made no verbal reply, but his eyes had looked a question at me. "How do you know it didn't?" And then I had asked the boy's question. I had asked,